Chapter 6. There was always a letdown after a mission. The slump that came in the aftermath of adrenaline coursing through the blood in the rush of battle. Everyone dealt with it differently, but for once, the others stayed quiet for the duration of the trip home. Lusuria and Seta kept their dark jokes to themselves, and Cavillo didn't say anything at all, and even Mammon kept his mouth shut on what he'd had to do when Squallow had really half expected to hear him complain about revealing the extent of his strength as the Mist Archibaleno. Xansus was absolutely silent, gone somewhere in her head. When they hit headquarters, Squallow had to dismiss the rest of them hastily and stretch his legs to keep up with her as she made for her quarters. She let herself into them and began stripping out of her clothes before Squallow had even managed to get the door decently shut after them. "Boss," he said, as she peeled out of her leathers, which stuck to her skin in the places where Enrico had cut her. "Xansus, don't you think you should get those looked at?" Though he wasn't sure she was actually in any mood to deal with Bastogne's sniping. "I don't care." There was nothing in her tone. No triumph or sadness or rage. Like all the emotion had burned out of her once Spade had disappeared. Squallow sucked in a breath and closed his hands into fists at his side. "I care, boss," he said. "Let me... no, not call someone. Not right now. Let me patch you up, okay?" She was turned away from him, her head lowered, so all he saw was the way her shoulders rose and fell, as on a sigh. "Fine, if that's what you want." It was, or was a start. So he went for the first aid kit stowed in her bathroom and came back with it. She'd taken a seat on the edge of the bed while he was gone, and her expression was still unreadable. Squallow didn't say anything, didn't know what he could say, so he knelt at her feet and started with a slice across her thigh, swabbing it out with antiseptic. It was shallow enough that it wasn't going to need stitches, so once it was clean, he painted it with the liquid bandage to seal it and moved on to the slices across her shoulder, which were also shallow and easily dealt with. It was the stab wound on her arm that worried him with how deep it was. He grimaced at it as he cleaned it out, listening to the little hitches of her breath that were the only sign that she was feeling anything he was doing. At least she wasn't so far gone that she wasn't feeling pain. Small consolation, that. "Think this is gonna need stitches." She grunted, which he took as permission to get on with it. Squallow sighed and reached for the suture kit. Bastogne didn't like it when they overstepped themselves, as she put it, but all of them could do basic field medicine, and he'd had more practice than most at sewing up blade wounds. He still winced every time he sank the needle into Xansus' flesh and pulled another suture through it, because it was one thing to sew himself up and another altogether to do it to her. She held herself still through it, until Squallow tied off the last one and clipped the ends short. There were other things he could see now that he was looking. Raw places like burns. "What?" he asked, skirting his fingers across one that ran across her shoulder. Had it been... the ice did this? "The zero point." Xansus' voice was distant. "It's the first's technique. Only the boss and his heir learn it. He must have taught Enrico after. It's only really good for fighting another sky." Squallow's throat felt tight with something. Anger, maybe. "Looks like it wasn't much good against you." The raw places looked like burns, and if there was one thing Xansus' first aid kit was stocked well in, it was burn ointment. She stopped him when he reached for it, laying her fingers against his wrist. When he glanced at her, all she said was, "Shower." Squallow nodded. That made sense. There were still dark circles of blood in the crescents under her nails, and a splatter of blood drying on her face. And they'd both worked up a sweat during the trials. "Sure, boss." Something like a shudder rocked her. "Not tonight," she said, which didn't make any sense until she went on. Just not boss. Not tonight. Squallow nodded, accepting that. Sure, he said, softening his voice. Xansis. Something, relief maybe, eased the look in her eyes. She pushed herself up and paused. Come with me. It was less a command than a request. Always, Squallow promised her, and stripped himself out of his uniform as he followed her into the bathroom, which was as luxuriously fitted out as only befit the leader of the Varia, and had a shower that was plenty big enough for two bodies. Had good water pressure, too, though Xansis hissed when she stepped beneath the spray and immediately adjusted the temperature to something lukewarm. Then she turned her face into it, eyes closed, and let the water stream over her face and slick the hair back from it. The water sluiced over both of them, carrying away the worst of the sweat and blood with it. When she just stood there, not moving, Squallow touched her uninjured shoulder with his fingertips. Want me to get your hair? She nodded without opening her eyes, so Squallow undid the catch of her hair dangle, bedraggled now, the feathers dark and limp from the water, and laid it aside as he reached for the shampoo. The fragrance of it, sweet and vaguely floral, was strong enough to cut through the last iron smell of blood, which was probably for the best. Squallow worked it into her hair, massaging his fingers against her scalp, and the only sound between them was the hiss of the spray. Maybe he needed to be talking to her, but he wasn't sure what he needed to say or she needed to hear. And until he figured that out, it wasn't worth risking it. Easier to do this, to rub circles against her scalp and watch some of the stiffness ease out of her body. There was conditioner to go with the shampoo once he'd rinsed the suds from her hair, and then Squallow eyed the raw places on her skin and her sponge and just soaped his hands instead of risking abrading those places any more than he had to. She still sucked in her breath every time his palms passed over one of those burns, despite how careful he was. Squallow grimaced every time she did, and was glad to be finished. Probably the only time he'd ever not wanted to touch every centimeter of her for as long as possible. Xansis didn't move to step out of the spray, not even after the last of the suds had swirled down the drain. So he reached for the shampoo again and scrubbed the last of the fight off himself. And then Xansis turned and leaned against him, still silent, and pressed her face against his shoulder. Squallow drew a breath and wrapped his arms around her and held her until the water went cold, and she'd begun to shiver. She was still shivering when they'd gotten dried off, and he'd spread ointment across the burns, which patterned her arms and torso and even climbed the side of her face, and she'd slid herself under the blanket. Squallow settled under them with her, wrapping himself and the blankets around her and pressing himself as close to her as he could manage. He whispered her name against her hair. Xansis closed her hand on his arm and held on to him, digging her fingers into the muscle of his shoulder hard enough that Squallow knew there would be bruises there when he looked in the morning. A pattern shaped like her fingers. I'm here, he said, whispering it into the dim light that came from the lamp burning in the next room. The one that always stayed lit these days. I'm not going anywhere. Don't, she said, barely more than a breath against his skin. Stay. Always, Xansis, he promised her, and felt her shivers finally begin to ease. It was close to a week before they heard anything out of the main house. Anything official. Kala's squad had started the day after the ring trials like any other day, and brought reports in detailing the uproar at the main house. The Ninth hadn't exactly collapsed in the wake of losing yet another son, or at finding out that Enrico had been the one who'd been responsible for Frederico's death, but it had hit him hard nonetheless. Or so Sixth Squad said. Two, There was the fact that Spade had apparently clouded a whole bunch of people's heads to make that scheme work, which meant that a lot of the Vongola underbosses and guardians were walking around with missed hangovers and scrambling to untangle the mess they'd made of things. When Squallowed asked, though, Kala said that it didn't seem like anyone at the house was in contact with the Vendicare or pushing for a punitive response for Enrico's death. They weren't supposed to, of course. At least, not according to the protocols that went along with holding a ring ritual. But these days, Squallow only trusted the geezers and the old man about as far as he could throw them. Xansus took the news Kala and the Sixth Squad brought silently, acknowledging the reports briefly and giving no sign of what she thought of any of it. Where the rest of the Varia was inclined to celebrate, their boss had escaped the inescapable prison and won the Trial of the Rings, and exposed a conspiracy at the heart of the Vongola, she was withdrawn, as though she wanted to distance herself from the whole affair. She went about the daily tasks, running the Varia, and trained in the halls, and said very little to anyone, even Squallow, until someone came down from the main house with the message that Enrico Vongola was going to be laid to rest the next day. The man who'd brought the announcement, not an invitation, nor quite a command, was an underboss Squallowed never met. He was visibly unnerved to be in the presence of the woman who led the Varia and was responsible for the funeral he was announcing. Xansus listened to him stutter out the details of the arrangements with the same motionless expression that was starting to become the new normal, and Squallow committed them to memory. In the afternoon, 3 o'clock, the private chapel of the Vongola, very small, family only. That was when she stirred, and the Ninth's messenger gulped. "Family only," she repeated, voice soft. The messenger nodded. "Who sent you?" "The Ninth did, ma'am," he said, beads of sweat standing out on his forehead. "I see," Xansus said. And that was all. The man winced, anyway, and plunged on. "Will you be attending, ma'am?" Xansus gave him a long look, one that made him go even paler. "You said it was for family only." "Yes," he ventured, looking more baffled than anything. That was quite enough of that. Squallow laid a hand on his shoulder. "Thanks for the message." He steered the man toward the door. "We appreciate the information." Omar was standing sentry outside Xansus's office. He handed the poor idiot off to him. "Help this gentleman find his way out of here." He shut the door very firmly and looked to the boss, who was staring into space with an expression like she'd just tasted something bitter. "A private funeral, just for the family," she repeated, and her voice twisted on the final word. She seized the heavy glass paperweight holding down a stack of papers and hurled it across the room. It smashed against the wall, exploding into a million pieces of wicked shrapnel. "Family!" Color flushed her face, turning the healing burn on her cheek an angry red. Squallow stepped back from the mess of glass in case she wanted to throw something else against that wall. "I wish I knew what dictionary they were using," he said, keeping a careful eye on her and privately relieved to see her showing some emotion and reaction at last. "I'm sure I've never heard anyone else use family the way they do." Her laugh was harsh. "No, I haven't either." She stood fast enough that her chair rattled back and rebounded off the wall behind her desk and strode around her desk to pace across the floor. "What the fuck?" she demanded, cutting her hands through the air. "What is he thinking now? Invite me to the funeral and pretend that it's all okay? That none of this happened? What's he planning now?" "I don't know," Squallow said, watching her clench and unclench, fists hazed with flame. "I really don't." It could be a stab at getting her away from the Varia, out in the open where they'd have a better shot at taking her down. Or it could be a half-assed attempt at reconciliation. Or it could be the Ninth deluding himself that they were a happy family. You going to go and find out? The low table in front of the couch was home to a vase of cut flowers. Xanthus snatched it up and sent it to oblivion after the paperweight, and stared at the mess of glass and flowers and water, her shoulders heaving like she'd just run a race. No. She stopped and raked her hands through her hair. Fuck no. More quietly, she said, I don't have any place there. Squillo wasn't sure he could have disputed that if he'd wanted to. If you say so. Not sure I could fake being sorry he's dead anyway. That got him a smile, brief and sharp. They do say it's gauche to go watch someone you killed be buried. Maybe. He shrugged at her. But it could be satisfying, too. Xanthus's smile faded as she turned away from the mess. Not really, no. She jerked her chin. Call someone to get that cleaned up. Squallow nodded. Sure thing, boss, he said, as she returned to her desk and got back to work. In the end, they laid Enrico Vongola to rest without Xanthus's presence, and a few more days slipped past, uneasy with the tension of waiting to see what was going to happen. Xanthus spent the time on the edge, pacing through the halls in moody silence and training as relentlessly as she had in preparation for the ring trials. Something of her mood communicated itself to the Varia, so when the Ninth, his right hand and his reign, came down to them a few days after the funeral, they entered a whole building full of alert, edgy assassins. It was fitting, really. The last time the boss of the Vongola had come to the Varia, rather than the other way around, had been well before any of the present Varia had joined up. The old man deserved the brisk welcome he got from First Squad, which held them in the front hall while Lusuria sent a runner to find the boss and see what she wanted done with them. Xanthus was in the training hall when Gustav found her. She'd been methodically tearing a series of practice dummies apart with surgical blasts of flame while Squallow ran through Kata and kept an eye on her. Her expression didn't waver as Gustav delivered the message from Lusuria, but the final dummy exploded when she drove a blast of flame at it that was neither surgical nor precise. Take them to the client room, she said, voice perfectly even. I'll see to them there once I've cleaned up. Oh, that was subtle. Squallow couldn't help being delighted with it as he racked his sword and followed her out. Treating the Ninth himself like one of their ordinary clients and making him wait on her convenience? That was a good one. Made all the better because no one could say that it wasn't appropriate for the Varia's boss to greet the head of the Vongola in proper attire rather than sweaty disarray. No one could say that Xanthus wasn't trying. What do you think he wants? Xanthus asked when they were safely alone and had scrubbed themselves clean. Wasn't that just the question? Squallow considered it as he wrung water out of his hair, watching her set expression from the corner of his eye. Don't really know, he confessed. But he came here, and he only has Teferi and Martelli with him, so he's probably not here to fight. Not the physical kind of fight, which was maybe not as good a thing as it seemed. They were far better equipped for a physical fight. The other kind? Well, that's why Xanthus had him. If that was where the Ninth wanted to take it, well, Squallow had all sorts of choice things he'd been saving up to say to this shitty old man. Why do you think he's here? Sometimes direct questions could get her to talk a little more, even if it felt strange and presumptuous to be trying to draw her out that way. She just shook her head and went to dig through the closet for clothes. I don't know what he wants. Not anymore. She tossed a shirt and slacks at him. Maybe I never did. Squallow sighed. Or maybe he just never knew how to deal with you. That too. Xantha stared into the closet, her eyes gone distant again. Then she shook herself and reached for a blouse. Only one way to find out, I guess. They finished dressing in silence. Squallow didn't say anything when she settled her guns on her hips, something she didn't normally bother with for meetings with the old man. He just reached for a blade of his own to wear instead. When they got down to the parlor that served for dealing with clients, they saw that the ninth had taken one of the wing chairs arranged around the low table. It should have lent him an imposing air, but didn't. He looked frail, old and worn and sad, like all his years had finally caught up with him. He sat quietly, balancing a cup and saucer on his knee, and Steferi and Martelli stood close at hand. They didn't look tired so much as worried, very worried, and maybe a touch embarrassed. Xantha stood in the doorway and looked at them for a moment before she claimed the other chair, the one standing opposite the ninth's. She rested her palms on the arms, back very straight, and Squallow wondered whether the other three would know her well enough to see the uncertainty in her posture. She gazed across the low table at the old man and finally said, "What is it?" The ninth's voice was quiet. It almost seemed like he couldn't bring himself to look at Xantha directly, at least not for long. "Now that I am here, I find I don't know how to begin." His gaze slid from hers, and he gestured, "We brought something that you left the other night. Gianni?" Steferi reached into his jacket, and Squallow was sure that none of the geezers missed the way that made his back go stiff or his hand drop to his sword. The ninth practically flinched. God alone knew why. But all Steferi produced was a flat little box, one that was very familiar. He handed it across the table to Squallow, who flipped the catch to check. Yes, that was the other half of the sky ring and the other half of the mist ring that were nestled against the black velvet lining of the box. Squallow looked at them, and then the old man, mind racing, trying to unravel what they meant by this gesture. Was it an acknowledgement that what the Cervello had decreed was official? He stared at them hard, but couldn't make anything of the ninth's tired eyes or the close way Martelli and Steferi watched him. After a moment, Squallow said, "It's the rings, boss." "I don't want them." Xantha enunciated each word distinctly, never taking her eyes off the ninth's. She made no move to take the box. "You can have them back. You can have them all back." She reached up and twisted her fingers in the chain around her throat, yanking on it until the catch popped and the end slithered free, and her half of the sky ring dangled from her fist. "I don't want anything to do with it." Now he could read the geezer's faces. That was shock. Three looks of near identical disbelief as Squallow twisted the ring rein off his own finger, took the half ring from Xantha, and dropped them both in the little box. When he held it out, Steferi took it, looking as though he was acting on autopilot. "But," he said, sounding stunned, "you fought." "I had a job, and I did it." Xantha bit each word off. They killed Federico Vongola, and I wasn't going to let him go unavenged. I wasn't going to let that lie go unchallenged. She took a breath. "They killed him so I could have the damn things, and I don't want them. I don't want anything else to do with your shitty family." It took everything Squallow had not to show his reaction when she finally said it, laying it out for him and the geezers alike. And if they didn't understand all the things it explained, her silences, her grim expressions, the way she went still sometimes when someone called her boss, he did. He understood perfectly. He couldn't do anything as overt as drop his hand to her shoulder in front of the geezers. They didn't need to see that kind of vulnerability in her. But he wanted to. They're your family, too, the ninth said. No, they're not. The leather creaked under Xanthus's fingers as she gripped the arms of her chair. They've never been my family. A ghost of a smile touched her mouth. That's the one thing I can thank Enrico for. At least I know why now. Pain flickered across the ninth's face. The things Enrico said are true, or everyone thinks they're true. Xanthus's voice went harsh. He might have been the only one who's ever said them to me, but he sure as fuck wasn't the only one who believed them. Or why else do you think everyone was so willing and ready to believe I did it? The leather under her fingers groaned uneasily. If everyone hadn't already thought of me as the crazy whore's slut of a daughter, if they hadn't already wanted a reason to get rid of an embarrassment to the family, do you think it could have worked as well as it did? She laughed, the sound as ugly as the sentiments she repeated. Do you really think there aren't people saying that I really just orchestrated the whole thing, set Enrico up to take the fall, all so I could have the family right where I wanted it? There was an eyewitness, Steferi protested, gesturing to ward off the words, as if that could keep them from hurting his boss, could keep them from being true. Fidel saw the whole thing. What were we supposed to think? You were supposed to think, Squallow said before he could stop himself. You were supposed to use the brains God gave you and think about how neatly it all fit together and listen when people told you there was something wrong. Or what else do you pay Sawada for? At the very least, you could have stopped and not made snap decisions while you let that shitty ghost of a mist user manipulate you all. That one hit home with Steferi anyway, who was supposed to be a pretty decent mist in his own right. The ninth flinched again, though he kept his eyes on Xanthus. It's not true, he said, practically pleading with her. That's not. No one really thinks those things are true, Xanthus. You were Vongola, no matter what ugly things Enrico said. Timoteo, Martelli said, stopping him. His eyes were resting on Xanthus, too. Dark in a face whose lean, weathered features were unmistakably dark and other. Squallow thought there might have been empathy in the way he looked at her. If she says she's known these things to be true, I'd listen to her. The family isn't always kind to the ones who are different. Be damned, one of the geezers actually had a brain. The ninth looked up at him, away from the expression on Xanthus's face, turning disbelieving eyes on his reign. She's my daughter, he protested. You're my reign. We're all Vongola. That's why we're Vongola. He moved restlessly. The cup rattled against the saucer on his knee. If that's not how we're treating one another, why didn't someone say something to me? Would you have believed it? Xanthus sounded more tired than anything else. Or would you do what you're doing right now and find a reason, any reason, not to believe what you were hearing? She shook her head, grimacing. What else did you want? I don't want your shitty rings, so let's get on with it. That's the reason we're here, though, Martelli said after a strained moment. Xanthus, you won the trial for the rings. You are our heir now. Massimo has made it strenuously clear that he has no ambition to challenge you for that position, and... When he trailed off into silence, Steferi picked up the thread. We need you. His voice was very even. The family is in disarray at the moment, which means that our enemies are already moving to take advantage of the moment. They look at us, our strongest heir dead, another heir killed fighting his sister, and the fourth one manifestly unsuited for the job, and they smell blood in the water. Xanthus looked at Martelli and Steferi, then at the ninth, all of them sober, and laughed, nearly soundlessly. You need me, she repeated, her voice rough. You need me. I fail to see what's funny in that. Xanthus's shoulders continue to shake with that soundless laughter. Soundless something. You wouldn't, would you? To hell with appearances. Squallow set his hand on her shoulder, gripping it, hoping that she'd remember that she wasn't alone in this. I'll tell you what I think is funny, he said, feeling the tremors shaking Xanthus beneath his palm. You three have come here to hand off those rings and tell us how the Vongola needs an heir, and you haven't even breathed a word of apology yet. I call that funny, don't you? That just set Xanthus off again. Apologies? Her laughter was audible this time, ragged and hovering too close to turning into something else. Apologies mean owning up to something being wrong. Do you really think you're going to see the fucking Vongola Ninth admit that he might have been wrong about something? There was that, of course. Xanthus squeezed her shoulder, not sure he dared more than that. Then, to his surprise, the Ninth bowed his head and said quietly, I am sorry. He set the cup and saucer aside and twisted his hands together until the knuckles stood out white under his skin. I thought I was doing what was best. I swear that I only ever acted for what I thought was best. For you and our family. If, when I was wrong, I meant no harm by it. That I have harmed you, I regret that more than I know how to say. I'm sorry, Xanthus, and I have no right to ask more of you. No right at all. But I have no alternative. We need you to take the role that you've claimed. Please, my girl. Please, there must be parts of the family that you would not like to see destroyed. He looked up again, and his eyes were wet. Frederico wouldn't want. Don't! Xanthus nearly snarled the word. Don't you dare! Don't you dare bring him into this! Bad enough they killed him because they wanted me to take his place without you or anyone else trying to tell me what he would have wanted. He's dead, he's gone, and he's not... He's gone. The Ninth gazed at her for a moment and nodded. I'm sorry. It will not happen again. It had better not. Xanthus's voice was as hard as her eyes. Squallow squeezed her shoulder as the Ninth drew a deep breath and passed his hands over his eyes. But when he looked up, his eyes were steady again, if a bit red. I apologize. He cleared his throat. But the fact, it remains that we need a strong heir. The family needs someone to protect it. I know you don't have any cause to love the family right now, or me, but please... You acknowledged the terms of the ring battle. You agreed to them, even if it was only a means to your end. I beg you, don't abandon us now. Please, Xanthus. I don't want this, Xanthus said again. Her muscles were as hard as rocks under Squallow's fingers. I don't want this. I don't want your guilt trips. You people gave me to the Vendicare to rot, and you thought I... You thought that was what I deserved. God damn all of you. I can't do this. She bolted out of her seat, shaking Squallow's hand off her shoulder, and turned away from them, pacing across the floor like a caged animal. And the worst part is that I don't have any choice in it. No choice at all. Choice, Squallow thought, recalling a meandering conversation at a sushi counter in a sleepy Japanese town. Sawada, he said out loud, interrupting her. She turned and looked at him, and the geezers made startled sounds. Maybe he wasn't supposed to know that. Sawada, boss, he's Vongola too, from when the first went to Japan and married again. She stared at him, frowning, and he gestured. He is a son, boss, a kid who's a legitimate collateral descendant just like you. Well, not precisely like her, but close enough. And he's a lot older than Massimo's brats. Xanthus stared at him, then looked away from him, at the geezers. So, she said, voice soft, chilly. It's not just me. Tsunayoshi is still very young, the ninth said before pausing, delicately. He may not be boss material at all. It's too soon to be sure. And in the meantime, that leaves us without an heir. I'm old, my girl. Old and tired. Dantus brushed that aside, impatient with his temporizing. But there's someone else, she said. Someone who can do this. The look the ninth gave her was a long one. Eventually, perhaps, he might be able to do it. Something kindled in Xanthus's eyes. He will, she said. If I have to kick his ass into doing it myself, he will. She nodded, sharp. All right, I'll hold this fucking family together until he can take it. But after that, I'm done. Do you understand me? The ninth's shoulders slumped a little. I've already promised Iemitsu that the Mafia world will not touch his son until he's older. We agreed that the boy deserves a proper childhood. He is not to hear of the Vongola until he's 13. He paused. That's 5 years from now. Xanthus's mouth tightened. Then don't you fucking die on me before then, old man. I don't want to be left holding the bag on this. Both Martelli and Steferi looked like they wanted to say something about that, but the ninth held up his hand, silencing them both. I shall do my best, he said quietly, something going resigned in his eyes. But we are agreed then. You will do this for the family? Xanthus straightened her shoulders. I guess I will, she said after a moment. The ninth exhaled. Thank you, he said, voice soft. Thank you, my girl. This is more of a relief than I know how to say. Steferi extended the box of rings to Squallow, who took them again reluctantly. We'll need you at the house for meetings, and so the family can see you, he said. You and your right hand. And your other guardians. Though they will need to be present less frequently. We've already let time get away from us, so... Tomorrow we'll start fresh. Martelli cut in, smoothly enough. His smile was a touch sardonic. As fresh as we can manage, at least. Xanthus's mouth was flat, but she gave them a curt nod. Fine. Tomorrow. The geezers watched her, maybe expecting something else. Then the ninth sighed and levered himself to his feet. Tomorrow, he said quietly. Until then. He turned toward the door, moving at a slow pace, and Steferi and Martelli fell in to hover over him like a pair of worried nursemaids. When the door closed after them, Xanthus cursed softly, low and angry, and spun away to the sideboard. She poured a finger of scotch into one of the tumblers and tossed it back. Fuck, she said when she'd done that. Fucking old man. Squallow looked at the tense line of her back and bit his lip. I'm sorry, boss, he said. I should have found some other way to get you out of there. Some way that hadn't entailed getting tangled up with Sawada's agenda and the fucking rings. Xanthus looked at him, mouth tight, and then shook her head. Can't be helped now. At least I'm out. She looked away, raking her hair back from her face, gone silent. She bit her lip and didn't look at him as she asked, Do you think he meant it? That covered a lot of ground. Squallow hesitated and finally asked, Which part? He said he was sorry. Xanthus studied something on the sideboard, expression intent on it. Do you think he meant it? Squallow thought it over. As much as he ever means anything, I guess, he said. He regretted something, anyway. Maybe just the fact that he'd fucked up enough to have to apologize, for all Squallow knew. Does it matter? Xanthus laughed, short and hard. No, not really, I guess. I'm stuck with it now. She went silent for a moment. I must be crazy. Not really, Squallow said, shrugging when she glanced at him. Just stuck with a shitty pack of geezers and a nasty long-term job is all. When her mouth quirked faintly, he added, "Least you've got us to watch your back." Kavila's only doing it so she'll know when to stick the knife in, Xanthus pointed out, though there was something beginning to ease in the hard line of her mouth. Squallow spread his hands, shrugging at her helplessly. "Can't have everything, boss." That time her laugh was close to the real thing. "Guess not." She gestured at the box of rings. "Put those somewhere safe for now." Squallow nodded. "I'll round up the other ones, too." He tucked the box under his arm and paused before going to do just that. "You gonna be okay, boss?" She didn't answer right away. Instead, she looked away from him, tracing her fingers along the edge of the sideboard. "I'll survive." That wasn't quite the same thing. Squallow opened his mouth to say as much, then decided against it. "Guess that's a place to start," he said. "Yeah," Xanthus said. Mouth quirked like she knew what he'd been about to say. "I guess it is."